The following is brought to you by Total Seal Piston Rings, the leader in ring seal technology. TotalSeal.com. Hello and welcome to another edition of Hidden Horsepower presented by Total Seal Piston Rings. I'm Joe Costello and this episode is going to blow your mind. We always talk about ring seal and how significant it is because that's how you make the most out of your cylinder heads and your intake manifold and your supercharger, whatever boost you're using. We have got a specialist who is in that field. First, let's bring on Keith Jones, the director of technical sales from Total Seal Piston Rings. Keith, how are you?
I'm doing great, Joe. How about yourself today?
I am super excited for Hidden Horsepower. Our audio only folks are going to love the show and they're going to like the way it all goes down. And some people, who knows, might even see this example of Hidden Horsepower as we're using a little bit different technology to make it happen. And I can see Keith and Keith can see me. Not necessarily a good thing.
You know, it could be scary at times, but I'll tell you, this is a whole new era for us. I mean, we're going into the audio and video world. So I may have to actually comb my hair next time.
Yeah. Or you don't, right? You've got that genius vibe going on and they are never very kempt. So our guest this week, Keith Wilson, Wilson Manifold. It's really interesting to me because from my perspective, growing up in the South Florida drag racing community, Keith Wilson is a fellow racer and a guy from Miami Hollywood Speedway and Moroso Motorsports Park and a local South Florida performance guy who over his career has expanded into all forms of motorsport, has had success on the NASCAR tracks, has done a lot of things in a lot of areas. And you don't have to go far. You watch certain drag racing TV shows. You see that Wilson Manifold's logo. It has become synonymous with performance. I know you guys do a little bit of work together and even Hartford, and he had a racing program. So this is going to be interesting to me.
Absolutely. It's going to be very cool. Here's the thing. I'm kind of at a loss because I know of Keith. I've met him before, but I don't know him. So this is going to be as new to me as it is to the listeners.
Well, that is exciting. And I am super excited for it. So let's bring him on from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, performance city that it is, even though spring break is the headline right now. Let's bring on Keith Wilson. Keith, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. All right.
Fortunately, I know both of you guys from our history.
Yes. Keith. You guys have spoken on the phone, but now, you know, Keith Jones was just saying, I'm going to call you guys Jones and Wilson, just so you know, to separate it. But it's cool to bring everybody together because, man, you know, when people talk about performance, that intake manifold, which is your specialty, Keith Wilson, is so important.
Yes, I actually did manifolds for Keith Jones's car. Manifold is very important. We can go into more detail later, but it supplies the air and fuel to the cylinder heads and being having it the most balanced.
Obviously, Keith, you guys do the ring seal part of it, Keith Jones. But that charge has got to get in there to be sealed up and keep the oil and the fuel apart from each other. So it's vital technology.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, we're trying to do everything we can to improve ring seal on the intake stroke, get that airspeed, get that velocity, get that draw. And then you cork the whole thing up with an old cast iron quadrajet manifold. All the ring seal in the world is not going to do you a darn bit of good. You got to have one of Keith's manifolds sitting on top of that thing to get it all in there.
Exactly.
Well, you guys have done such a good job over the years in ring seal and sonar wall and coatings and figuring out rings that have made the engine be able to breathe more air or draw more air in. So it's made cylinder heads and manifolds way more important than it was in the past. It's always been important, but it's evolving with the ring seal and what rings have done to racing and the racing engines. It has amplify the necessity of airflow.
Yeah. Well, like we say, Keith, it's KW, KJ. I mean, it's like it's all links in the chain. Everything affects everything. You know, if we can do our job better, that helps you guys. It's just we all affect each other.
Absolutely.
All right, so let's find out though, as we do on most of our episodes. Like, not everybody, unfortunately, the driver, or fortunately, the drivers get all the love and the stardom, and they take the horsepower out on the track, and they win the race, and they get on TV. The people who make the horsepower, design the parts, are destined for anonymity very often. But that's what Hidden Horsepower is all about. Not only learning a little bit, we're going to learn a little bit today, but learning about the person who makes it happen. So Keith Wilson, how did you get here? How did you get into this as someone who has been referred to as someone who can see the air? Tell us your origin story. How did you realize that this was a talent, and how did you get involved in this aspect of auto racing and mega power?
I came from a racing family. My father raced amateur road racing, a little bit of pro, but I ended up building engines and porting stuff even in before high school, and then got involved with airspeed engineering and worked there 10 years and did manifolds and cylinder heads for years. And it became to me like a God-given gift, lack of a better way to put it. I just found it very intriguing to learn about it and to study it. And for whatever reason, I have a knack for understanding it better than most. And a lot of hard knocks too. You know, we've done a lot of things that didn't work, but you got to learn why it didn't, the engine didn't accept it. And that's helped us out as well. That's how I got started. And then working with top people in the country, like Jason Lyons, one of my best friends, but and work with many NASCAR teams, all types of teams, honestly. And when your stuff is tested, like the rings are, on a dyno, and you have the top people in the world looking at it, you're scrutinized like no others. So it makes you good. And it also, you working around quality, good people, a group of smart people is always better than one. And I always try to hire good people and work with good teams. So feedback is real.
Jones, jump in here with a question for Keith Wilson.
Well, you know, Keith, so, you know, just giving us our, you know, the background of road racing, but what other stuff have you, I mean, obviously you're involved with every aspect of drag racing, you know, every aspect of road racing. I mean, I'm sure marine, on and on and on and on, you know, probably all the way up to pulling tractors and stuff. What haven't you worked on that you want to work on?
Formula One. That's the only thing I haven't been able to get into. I got introduced to the head of Mercedes, and he asked me, how many seats of CFD do you have? At that time, they were like $40,000 a seat. And I'm sure he did his research on him. I couldn't lie to him. And I didn't have that at the time. And, you know, he said, well, we have 27 seats. So someday it's one of my feats to get into Formula One. I may fail, but, you know, I'll try my guts out.
The pinnacle, right? Yeah. The pinnacle. But let's talk a little bit about some of the things that you have done, because I am envisioning Keith Wilson, cylinder head porter in, you know, 80s, 90s, and now thinking about the CNC machines that you have and the way that you guys design your manifolds and intake parts and pieces. We're going to talk about some of them, but Keith Jones mentioned it. Like, you've done all of those, starting out with, I knew you drag racing. You and Rob would bracket race at Moroso Motorsports Park, right? That's how we met. But right. You are involved in, let's start out with like offshore marine. You have several machines out there.
Yeah, we did Miss Geico for years. We do stuff for Kazi for the Mercury engines. We have the fastest V bottom in the world, factory billet boat, a 50 foot enclosed boat that did, I believe, 176. We do the shortest takeoff airplane. We do the fastest piston engine on earth. What is the Speed Demon out of Bonneville? Yep. But I've worked with almost every cup team for years and years. And it's fortunate to work around people like Mark Conquest, you know, RCR, Childress, Hendricks, and just working with those people and making you try to solve their issues or problems in flow, horsepower, and distribution has just refined us. And, you know, last weekend we helped Tasca on a funny car, and, you know, people thought because I was involved we were cheating or something, but it's just helping them understand what flow and how to tune the engine per cylinder.
Yeah, let's talk about that. The 340 mile per hour manifold was something that you had laid hands on, as I understand it. Am I correct about that?
Yes, sir. And what we did mostly is just flow it and make them understand what each cylinder needs. So they're able to tune up, do a tune up for a better distribution run. So the engine runs much smoother, so it allows it to accelerate better.
Incredible. All right, take us back to the NASCAR world, though, because I'm under the impression that in the 1990s, maybe, during that restrictor plate era, that you did some of your big work back then. What is your, we're doing resume material right now, but people see the logo. Do they know that a lot of those plate wins for RCR, those were Wilson manifolds, or they were certainly in the mix? What can you share?
Yeah, the restrictor plate time was a time of a lot of frustration, but a lot of hard work. And it made us, and including other people, cylinder heads, the teams, the engine builders, the dyno, how they dyno, they're looking for ones or twos. And that made us all better to look at data clearer and not kid yourself. But we did a lot of innovative stuff and restrictor plate stuff. And I've had 2 years where NASCAR wouldn't let the teams pull on the track for qualifying until we change something. Because they have in the rules, if they don't like something, they can change it. So I had Robbie come up and another guy from our shop and use somebody's shop in Daytona. I had to take over 20 manifolds out and fix them before qualifying. And after that, one sat on a pole and won one. Not that the manifold alone made him win, but they were on top of good engines, but they did their job as well. And that happened to me 2 years in a row. And NASCAR had me in a trailer screaming at me when, I did something very bad. But it was to the rules they had built.
Keith, jump in with a question.
Well, yeah, you would just say you found the thing that nobody else found. You saw something, that vision in your mind that you were able to, look at it, see it, and make it happen. And that's not cheating. You're just, like I say, you're optimizing the rules.
Yeah, I never blatantly cheated. We always, if it wasn't written a rule, we would work there. But, one of the things that we did try that I won't say the team or whatever, but it was something we worked on very hard. As you mentioned, Robbie Mansell works for us. He's one of the best welders. He does displays for Lincoln, and Lincoln's really tight with us. So we have some really good equipment. But we took the old Elderbrock style manifold on a small block, and that pie shape behind the water neck. Do you guys know it? I wish you had picture. Well, we cut the bottom, the valley off the manifold. We welded a false tray underneath the plenum and runners, and we routed water from the water, and then we dug channels back in the back to the back water tower. So water flowed underneath the runner and plenum like an OE manifold to get the wet fuel and vaporize it.
And we
sent it up there. It's back when you could send Delta Dash. We would run it the same day on a dyno from Florida. We would put on an airplane, and it worked really well until the manifold heat soaked. And so I won't say the person, but they went over and it was right before Daytona. They sawed it up in little pieces on a bandsaw and threw it away because they didn't want anybody knowing. And what I wanted to do after that is do something to restrict it had too much. It was too effective. So it heat soaked the manifold. The power came up and it fell back down. But we've done a lot of innovating stuff like that in NASCAR. There's probably 12 rules in the NASCAR rule books against things we did.
That's it. That's credibility right there. And that's what hidden horsepower is all about. Like the statute of limitations has run out on so many of those things. We love to hear about them. I know Keith Jones does, and Lake Speed certainly does. It's cool that you worked on the Speed Demon. We had Shane Tecklenburg on earlier at the end of last year, and he was on the EFI on that. And so it's like Keith Jones, it's like a brain trust. It's a very tight brain trust that are ending up on Hidden Horsepower talking about their wares and what they are capable of. But NASCAR and drag racing are very different, Keith Wilson. In drag racing, you're looking for as much horsepower as you can over a very short period of time. NASCAR, you got to make it live. How does that change the challenge that you have?
That's true in a lot of respects, but they've grown closer, the technologies. Naturally, NASCAR runs longer, but it's about making the engine more efficient. We work on fuel mileage. We work on distribution. We used to go to Talladega and test with Gibbs for years and actually work on an intervals in the garage. You know, we learned a lot by at the track looking at O2s at all eight cylinders. You know, I would get them to stack. I call it stacking the cars. We'd run one car. They would have three cars, one for aero, one for chassis, and one for engine. Well, we would get the O2 so close on the engine, I asked Mark Conquest to get the rest of the cars to stack up and let him dive in and out of them so that the air, see what how it affected the air going in the cow and how it affected the manifold. And he had to argue with him to get him to do it, but it threw the O2s completely apart again. So we had to go back to work and understand how to bring that together. And we worked some on the cow and some on the air entry on the bottom of the air cleaner. And we got them back together. We actually picked up speed, picked up fuel mileage, and they end up doing really well naturally.
Keith Jones, jump in with a question.
Well, no, that's, like you say, that's outstanding because, you know, that manifold, you know, that cylinder to cylinder balance and getting that even distribution. One of the things that came up in a previous episode, we were talking to Gene and talking about all the nitrous engines, how all of a sudden that introduction of the nitrous is literally helping to pull air from this cylinder into that cylinder. And we've got this cylinder going fat. That cylinder is going lean. I saw it on a small Chevy, small plate system on this thing, 150 shot and 6 and 8 and going lean as soon as the nitrous hit. And just like you say, working on that distribution, and it's just amazing what you guys have done. And the other ad, we talked about port and cylinder heads a little earlier, and I just had to throw this in. The worst, the nastiest job, anything to do with building an engine, porting your own heads. I remember standing there with my Fordham grinder in an old set of cast iron bow ties, and I'm going, I hate this. I just hate this. So we'll just say thank God for people like yourselves that have taken that job away from us.
Well, we take pride now. I've seen most porting shops around the country and at teams. We've built a room that it moves like 11,000 CFM of air on the grinding bench. So it's not a dirty dungeon. It's well lit. Our airlines come in above us on a moving pole. So it stays with you. It's not on your arms. So we try to do it the best way possible. We do a lot with CNCs, but we still probably, we are the only company ever issued a part number by GM Racing in NASCAR for manifolds. They had a recipe for the Truck Series and Busch Series, and they came out with one for the Cup. And our manifolds were always listed, and it was a hand-ported part. It was the only hand-developed part in the book.
Outstanding. And I just have to comment what you said. I've been in hundreds of shops over all the years, and you go into some of these just beautiful, pristine shops, and then you get to the headroom. Like you said, it's a dungeon.
Yeah, they're usually chasing around on a table. We made something that holds the head. We have lights above it, below it. You can see up through the ports. We make it very ergonomical, best as possible.
Wow.
I spent a lot of years in there. And for me, I'm a very visual person. So I even working with the engineers on CAD, I sit with them and look at the CAD, do cutaways, look down the port. You know, visual is still very, very important for me.
Absolutely.
Keith, nitrous oxide, you mentioned it a moment ago. That's something that, I mean, we're going to date ourselves, but it wasn't always a big thing. And then it became a big thing.
Yep.
And you dived into it with plate systems and various add-ons. And made it accessible to a lot of people. You know, I can put on the screen now some photographs of some of the stuff that you guys have got available at Wilson Manifolds and the, you know, parts and pieces. But I think it simplified it, maybe took some of the black magic out of it. Talk a little bit about how you took the concept of airflow and turned it into products available for people that they can buy and bolt on.
Well, I looked at it very closely. You know, Brandon Switzer, he worked for me at one time. I when his shop closed, we brought him in, bought his equipment, and I taught him a lot about flow. So nitrous, when it's a compressed gas, it's a liquid. Whenever it expands, it becomes a gas. So you see different components where it gets large and then small again. So you have it growing into a gas back into a liquid. So we just paid a lot of attention on flow. In fact, we just came out with a new billet plate for 4150 and 4500 that has every hole's at a different angle, so it sprays a true cone pattern. So it fills the whole plenum, not just the two sides. And we also spray it very well across the fuel, so it breaks up the fuel into a vapor.
Outstanding.
So, but we looked at distribution, same thing, you know, on fuel blocks or anything, you know, all the pressure goes to one, and not all of it, but the majority of it. So if you pay attention to details, you can just refine so much, and even blowers, turbos, or nitrous, you know, a lot of, and I don't know a better word, but people, I call it lazy horsepower. I don't mean to cut anybody down, but people think, well, if I bolt this part on, I make this much more horsepower. That's true. But if you refine what you have, you even make more. And you work on distribution, you know, on a blower, turbo, nitrous, you can always make more power if you refine everything.
Keith, jump in with a question.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I like to tell a story. You got a customer in California doing some asphalt late model stuff. And, you know, we did some changes to his ring pack, asked me what I thought and what I expected to see for power gains. And I said, I don't know, about 8, 9. I said, that should be pretty reasonable. He calls me a couple of weeks later off the dyno, and sure enough, he's picked up 8 horsepower. Well, about a week later, I've looked down, I'm here at work, and I look at my cell phone, and he's calling me. Well, they're at California Speedway testing. And he's like, well, how much manifold vacuum think this should make? What are you talking, idling? What are you talking? He goes, no, wide open, end of the chute. And I'm like, I don't know, half an inch, you know, it shouldn't be that much. And we're making like 5 inches of vacuum. I said, you got a restriction, man. You need a bigger plenum. You need a bigger camshaft. You need to get more into the cylinder. There's a restriction in this thing. And I'm not a manifold, you know, cylinder head camshaft guru, but we just talked about, we improved the ring seal that it hit the intake track so much harder. Long story, again, that link in the chain, well, they worked on the cam. They worked on the manifold a lot. And I know it was one of yours. And ultimately, like you said, lazy horsepower. They put the ring in. Yeah, what do you expect? 8, 9. At the end of the day, they made over 20 more horsepower because of how what we did affected what you did.
Right. Well, and that's why when somebody asks us to do a manifold, we have a 4-page data sheet. They have to fill out, else we will not do it. And the reason is that we don't have a magic wand. We're not smarter than everybody else. We just work hard. If you take the whole combination and see what they're doing, the weight of car, how many times they shift, what RPM, an estimate of horsepower, all that matters to us on, yep. You guys have a great show. I heard the one Stennett did on that did with you. And he talked about acceleration, acceleration on a car, holding fuel and suspension. All of that is so true. We think along those same lines. So you can do 2 different manifolds for 2 different engines and make them run completely different. So, you know, people, it's about what the customer wants to do it. I call it RPM window. You either fall to the converter or shift point to a shifting peak point. That's where your race is. That's what the motor sees. It doesn't know what it's attached to or what it has to do. It's accelerating from 6,500 to 8,500 or whatever that is. Whatever that window is where we concentrate.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in full disclosure, Gary Stinnett and Keith have talked about Project Pontiac, Jones. And so yes. It's pretty exciting for me to put, you know, these personalities together, and they're talking about a Super Street engine, which is hysterical. It's like a Super Street engine, really? And the answer is yes. And all kinds of conversations, weight of car, what are we doing at RPMs, power bands, what are we trying to do? Heavy car on a throttle stop, which is Gary Stinnett's specialty. And that episode was certainly very popular. But just cool to hear you guys talk about it.
We don't care who the customer is. If it's somebody that's a real racer that's passionate, we work as hard for them as we do for a Cup team or IRL team or, you know, Top Fuel. It doesn't matter, Pro Stock. It's if they're passionate and have the right parts, we want them to do as well as they can. It's a reflection on us if our part goes out and doesn't run. So we take pride in it like it's our car.
I couldn't agree with you more. I like to say Formula One to Formula Ford. I mean, I want your stuff to run. I mean, if a guy calls me with a little Formula Ford, it's like, what can we do? How can we tweak it? How can we trick it out? I want, you know, whatever they make for power, let's say it's 150 horsepower. Well, I want it to make 156. You know, what can we do? Exactly. You know, like you say, so super street, super gas. I mean, it's like, I want your stuff. I want to see Joe with the first 190 mile an hour super street car.
That's not happening, guys. As much as Alan Reinhardt keeps saying it's going to happen that way, it's not happening. I will be thrilled just to be out there, but it is amazing that everybody is in on this. You know, Keith Jones, Keith Wilson, Keith Jones found the block. There's so many different things.
Oh, okay.
Everybody's in on this, man. Everybody that is high performance, like speed, everybody is in on this deal. And it's really been amazing. Let's talk about challenging, though. Because I know you do intake manifolds for stock eliminator and you are restricted by the rules greatly. And you do manifolds in competition that are wide open where you can just do anything and create anything. You've done some things in pro stock, certainly pro mod. Otherwise, Street Outlaws guys, I've seen your shirts and your logos all over those cars, pro mod. So where's the challenge? Is it adhering to extreme rules or is it total creativity, wide open, create something that's never been created before?
Oh, that's a great question. Probably the most challenging is the ones with a lot of rules, like restrictor plate. Restrictor plate was very, very tough. And we've learned so much from it. We've applied some of the theory and thought into all the way to pro stock or any form of racing. There's a lot going on with reversion there. And I don't think reversion is studied as much as it should be in racing, and people, there's valve bounce, there's overlap, there's just so much going on in the engine, and it changes through RPM, and a lot of people don't understand that, and I don't know that I understand it all, because every engine is different. You know, an engine to me is infinitely adjustable, and you can get lost really quick, you know, in combination. So the most challenging thing is when the rules are very limited. So your hands are tied on what you can do, and that makes it more challenging. But it also makes you look for those ones or two horsepowers that makes you better in the end. And it makes you able to apply that to other forms. I learned so much in restricted plate racing, and going into it, I was cussing like a truck driver. You know, I didn't want to do it, and it was challenging. But then I started getting into it and starting understanding more what the engine wanted.
And like you say, I agree with you 100%. You know, the studying of overlap and how that affects things, like you say, lazy horsepower versus I'll call it earned horsepower. I've had parts that have come to me that, you know, I'm looking at the part, the customer's had a failure, and would just say everything about this part screams at me, this thing's deadly. We've got way too much heat. We're, you know, it's annealing parts. It's doing all these things, but yet they're swearing to me, you know, looking at O2s. Oh, the O2s are, we're 12.7. We're conservative. And I'm like, no, the part is absolutely telling me something else is going on. And then got into a conversation with a previous guy, Billy Godbold, Billy talking about how it's pulling fuel across the intake port into the exhaust port and falsifying the data. You know that better than I do, but it was very interesting conversation.
I love Billy. He's a good friend. But I will tell you one incident in testing at Talladega with Gibbs on the three cars. So we were testing working on O2s, and they had all kinds of telemetry there and a team of engineers. So we had one cylinder, two cylinders, but one cylinder was picking on it. We couldn't get the O2s right. So finally, I told Mark, I said, turn the manifold around, spin it around, take it off, turn it around. And he's looking at me like, what are you talking about? Well, that's when they went to spiders. And I said, it's a mirror image. Spin it around. Because we just worked on that port, and we could not make enough of a change. So I said, spin it around. So sent the car back out, same thing. And, you know, the bad or thought the bad port in the manifold was now on a good cylinder, and it ran fine. So it came down to water flow. Had nothing to do with it. They were going into detonation because of water flow. So a lot of people overlook what water is doing, even in a drag car. You know, if you get into a detonation and you start a detonation, a hotspot in a chamber, that bubble will start to populate. Once it uncovers and leaves bare cast aluminum, it's only going to grow. So you can't, once you start detonation on that type of engine or any engine, it's hard to make it stop if it's a detonation on heat. So we learned in that incident, it was more water flow than anything to do with the shape of the intake of the manifold.
It's interesting you brought that up, because I'll tell a quick story of working with some of the guys I deal with down in, you know, the supercar guys down in Australia, and they made a couple of rule changes, and all of a sudden we had some cylinders that were having problems, just as you mentioned. And what it ended up with in there is, because we're looking at O2s, we're looking, it's like, well, that's good. You know, water temperatures were okay, but what's in cylinder temperature? And what it all came down to, they made a couple changes where they literally tucked the header tube right up tight on the block. And they were heating that cylinder with the header tube, and it was throwing that hole into detonation. Wow. They insulated it, cooled it down.
The other thing I've run into is, you said header. I've run into it many times where, you know, the heads are CNC'd. We do our billet manifolds are CNC'd, you know, and they'll have a distribution problem. And you go look at the headers, and the one of them's coming out of the head, and it's turning right at the head. And you can see the discoloration in header. I can walk by a car and tell if you got good headers or not. And they'll be blaming. The manifold's always the one blamed on distribution. You know what I mean? I've been through that for years. And it can be us sometimes, but it's the whole package you have to look at. So yep. that you could have spend $1 million on heads and manifolds, whoever do it, and put a crappy header on it, and you're not going to have the distribution you should, or the acceleration, or the horsepower. Yep.
Interesting. All right, you're involved in something that is, I think, new age. I want to get to that, but before we do, you were showing off something really interesting at PRI this year. And you mentioned Rob Mansfield in the Lincoln booth. Like, everyone who goes to PRI and spends any time watching, you know, that guy do the welding at the Lincoln booth, that's Rob. And he's always great. But this year, Keith, you had a new piece that you're hopefully introducing to Boosted Engines. Tell me a little bit about what this is. It's like a blow off. Explain what it is, because it's not a performance part, it's a safety part. You explained me the deal. Correct. at PRI. Well, and I think this is a good venue to talk a little bit about it. Keith Jones, you're going to be interested.
I appreciate it. Naturally, I've been around racing all my life. My family raced. You know, I've lost some friends in different forms of racing. You know, so we built throttle bodies, and our silver throttle bodies and all the round ones ran well for years and years. Well, people keep upping the boost. It was 15-20 pounds, they're up to 100 pounds now. So we came out with a high boost throttle body that sealed up to 100 pounds, has a 5/8 aero shaft. It actually, our 123 throttle body outflows the 125 competitor because of the shaft and blade shape, and it doesn't leak. But we have people shutting the throttle body, and that pressure coming up was either bending the blade, breaking it, not only ours, competitors. And we had some cutters that the ECU is still delivering fuel because the shaft is broke and there's air going in. So the motor thinks it's still wide open, and the poor driver's trying to get it shut off. He's got to kill the engine, you know, because it's still charging. So we came up with this piece. Our new high boost throttle body is way more robust. We haven't had hardly any of them get hurt. But so we came up with this also, where people are running the Pro Charger pop-off valves. Well, we put them right against the blade. And then so the air, when the blade shuts, it hits the blade and then automatically dumps into the two pop-offs. The opening inside that cavity is 3 times the size of the pop-off, and it's radius. So the air, when it hits that blade shut, it automatically dumps, and it's a much safer thing. People weld those pop-offs on the inlet tube, and they usually break or crack from the weld, and you expect the air to hit the blade and go back down the tube against pressure that's building, and then try to go out a 90 drill, you know, sharp hole. So we just made it way more easy for it to relieve the pressure instantly. And we've gotten such good feedback that ProCharger even approached me at Lights Out Race and said that they're getting feedback that it's saving the ProChargers. And it's sure easier on the turbo too. So it's just way better for the car driver. And the other thing we have people do, we get a call a week at least, where people say our throttle bodies are sticking. And you, they say, well, send a picture of your setup. And they'll have the tube coming in, you know, against, not parallel to the throttle body. So it's hitting the blade, pushing on the blade. And not only does it pin the throttle blade open, but if you could see the air in like a CFD model, it's leaving the bottom of the throttle body and the air's leaving the top of the blade. So you're closing up your workable ID of air going through it. So this piece that we made straightens the air out before the blade. So it actually, people that don't come in correct to the throttle body, it actually picks up horsepower.
Oh, amazing. Well, you know, what's better than that, right? Something that helps out with safety and saves parts and maybe adds some horsepower, right? Like that's
NHRA trick. And a few sanction bodies looked at maybe mandating it. They liked it so much. We haven't heard back, but you know, I just want people to be safe. Go ahead.
We'll just say I'm a testament to that. This has been a few years back, but a friend of mine, Billy, little 5.0 Mustang, you know, S-trim Vortec on it. Car runs in the tens, 5-speed car. He's like, hey man, go check it out. You know, see what you think. So of course I go out there and a place I shouldn't have been and stuff my foot in it. And about the time I'm going to go to make the 3-4 gear change, I'm like, that's enough. I lift. Guess what? It doesn't lift. It's still going. And after a couple of seconds in your brain, it's like, stuff in the clutch and kill the ignition. And we'll just say that stopped it. But man, I can see exactly a system like that is so needed in these kinds of applications, whether it's full race, street, whatever. You lift the throttle, it needs to stop. This is important.
Exactly. And I mean, I didn't even want a car to get tore up, much less somebody get hurt, you know? So yeah. It was a no brainer once we thought it up, like this got to be on a car, you know, just for safety.
No, that's amazing. And we'd think a little bit more about like what the boost is doing to the hard parts in there. And it's going to stay the way it is unless some equal force acts upon it.
We try to tell customers on our standard silver throttle bodies, the unanodized ones, and even the high boost, send them to us once a year to rebuild them. It's your safety. It costs very minimal to rebuild them. The hard parts don't go bad. I mean, we'll put a new shaft in it for safety, for strength, but bearings and all that stuff, it's just safer and it's minimal charge. You know, just to protect the engine themselves, the car going off the end, you know, anything.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Brian Massengill from samtech.edu texted me when he heard that you were going to be on Hidden Horsepower, because I mentioned it on WFO. And he says that you're heading over there and that you guys are going to be testing. And so talk about tying everybody together, right? What is this you're working on, though, Keith? That's kind of interesting.
So what we did is... we designed a new LS7 four-barrel manifold, and we're making it carburetor to fuel injection. And what we've grown one in plastic to test, and I can go there and test and nobody needs to see it. And then once we know it's okay, we'll show it, but it's going to be a billet part and we're going to come out with a 4,500 version of it too. There's a lot of round track stuff running LS7s now. So, we do manifolds for Mullins. He has an LS7 package. You know, there's a lot of LS7, naturally everybody knows, going on. So we're just coming out with some CNC parts that we can sell to everybody. We're actually working on a new LS platform for the new Corvette, LT, I guess it is. The new Corvette engine, we're working on that as well, a bolt together billet piece.
Excellent.
Yeah, how does direct injection affect your business?
I've been around direct injection for a while in road racing and this fuel company. It has its benefits for sure, but on the new LS engines, they can't get enough fuel with these people putting turbos or boost on them. So we're actually putting a fuel rail on the manifold if people want to run a secondary injector. And we're also going to put a nozzle bung in it for nitrous if they want to go to nitrous.
And they do.
Right. Well, mostly
they will.
Yeah, there's a lot of people. We were the first company that concentrated on manifolds in the world. And there's a lot of people now making manifolds and they do beautiful work, great machine work. But I think from our experiences, we have a lot more knowledge on what the engine likes. So, and to, you know, it doesn't mean anything until it runs on a dyno, but I believe the new Corvette manifold will be very strong, and this new LS7 will be. And honestly, you know, it's completely different looking four barrel than it's ever been done. Some of my guys got nervous, but if it doesn't run, we'll go back to work. We've not, you know, made plenty of mistakes over the years, but learned from them. But I think it'll run really well. And we'll know after next week how it runs at Sam's school.
Exciting.
And they have a great LS7 race engine, so that's why we're going there. And I've hired a bunch of their employees, or their students, excuse me.
Students. Well, right, well, you know,
future employees.
Future employees. Well, you know, I talk about Sam Tech on WFO on a regular basis. All right, what's up with AquaStroke? Explain that, because he sent me, we were preparing Keith Jones, and he sent me a link. He's like, I'm working on this project too. And Keith's like, yeah, me too.
Oh, yeah.
Gonna get out of this.
It's a small world. Yeah.
Well, I got him hooked up with Total Seal years ago. You know, Matt, we ran a mountain motor pro stock for years, and Robbie drove it, and then Matt drove it the last year, and we won a championship. But I've known those guys at Total Seal forever. Actually, when I built engines back in the 80s, I used Total Seal. But I got Total Seal involved a long time ago. It's a group of very sharp people. They've come up with a fuel that's a non-fossil fuel, no emissions, and I've consulted for them for over 12 years, and they're really starting to get traction now. The engine's really coming together, and it's 70% water, 30% ethanol.
Yeah,
and it's. And the motor runs very, very well. Actually, I don't even know if I'm allowed to say, but there's other companies, big companies getting involved right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting to see, because like he said, we've been working with these guys for years and years, and there's lots of, I'll call it prototype, new development, new design engine companies that I've worked with over the years that, they're here today, gone tomorrow. They don't, they don't see it through to fruition, either from finances or whatever the reason is. But these guys, I mean, they're still going. They're getting the approvals. They're getting the accolades. They're getting they're getting noticed, and they're doing something different. And it's great to be involved with such a program that's made it this far. It's survived all these years, and it's coming to fruition now. So couldn't be more proud for those guys.
Yeah, I've been very fortunate in my career to work with some amazing engine people. Like most of your shows, the people you've interviewed, I've worked with almost all of them.
Of course.
And these guys are also very brilliant and never gave up, because back when fuel was very expensive, there was every kind of gimmick in the world, and they got a black eye. It just sounded like crap.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And nobody would believe in them. And they're finally getting traction. And I've been around the dynoing enough that on a single cylinder, they've run four cylinders, V8s. Every engine that we converted that was either gasoline or diesel, we've out horsepower and out torque, made torque on either fuel. So it definitely has merit.
Excellent.
I thought you can't combust water. Like, that's like core understanding for me. Like, is that wrong?
I'm not a chemist, but I know for a fact that somehow, because we sealed off the manifold on the single cylinder and the engine still ran. Didn't run good, but it ran. So oxygen was coming from somewhere.
Yeah.
I'm not a chemist, but somehow they're breaking the molecule apart. You know, with combustion, however it's happening.
Wow. And, you know, they got a website and videos and whatnot, and they're promoting and they're doing an interesting job. But the reason I bring it up is because we've had the conversations about the hydrogen combustion, Keith Jones. We've had conversations where, like, you know, everyone wants to drive us towards this electric future. And I'm sure that's good for really tight urban centers where everybody's got a garage and they can plug in somewhere, et cetera, and so on, whatever. But combustion is still viable, and it, you know, might not necessarily always be gasoline. There might be something else that works as good, or like Keith just mentioned, maybe better.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing that people miss on electrical is that anytime you run an engine, there's a percentage of loss. And like the Mercedes Formula One engine is probably the most efficient engine on the planet. Well, it's only in the high 30%. You know, a power plant is in the low 30%. So you expect, you're still plugging into 90% fossil fuel power plants in the country. So the electric goes to your house and then you put it into a battery and then the battery turns the wheel. Nobody talks about the loss from the power plant to the wheel. It's never discussed, you know, and the internal combustion engine has a lot left in it if people will work on it. So, but the thing that gets me, I read, nobody talks about the power plant, the loss from there to there, and internal electric, the electric wheel, the electric engine to turn the wheel. And that's completely forgotten about. It's still a 30% or more loss. It's no greener. It's, you know, unless it's solar, nobody wants any more nuclear. Nobody wants more coal. There's no more dams to dam or rivers to dam. So to, I forget what you call it,
stroke.
No. I'm sorry. Electric.
Hydroelectric.
Hydroelectric. I'm sorry. So, you know, we you know, the combustion engines not going anywhere soon to me.
And we didn't even mention the mining of the of this stuff. And I again, I'm okay with, but there's just more to think about. And you said it, Keith, like someone was just wearing me out about this the other day, the other hour, in fact. And it was like, when you get a solar panel on your roof that will charge your battery enough that you can drive in perpetuity, then you got something. But until that point, and it still won't have the sound. It still won't have what we like, which is there's a soul to it, too, which is the sound.
Like the Prius, I think it was American that actually invented it. But it on deceleration, it charges the battery. Now, that's ingenious. I think it may be a combination of an internal combustion engine and electric. I have nothing against electric, but let's not kid ourselves where the efficiencies are. But, you know, on that car, when it decelerates, instead of throwing heat away into braking, it generates electricity. Now, that's smart. And then you reuse that energy.
Yeah. Curse system. I mean, we're talking, you know, we want to capture that wasted energy. And as Keith said, you're looking at the internal combustion engine, that, you know, the perfect auto cycle doesn't exist. I mean, we're, you know, the efficiency of what we have in an internal combustion is nowhere near what it needs to be. More, you think of all the time and the effort and the money that's been spent on all these other ways, electric. What if we put that energy towards making that internal combustion engine that much more efficient that already exists? And alternate fuels. Doesn't have to be gasoline. Doesn't have to be diesel. You know, look at, like you say, what Eaton's done with, you know, the hydro, with, you know, the hydrogens that are out there right now. And, you know, it's just, is there a place for electric? I agree, but I think we're in the very infancies. And I'll say this just real quick. Congratulations to SpaceX on a successful launch today of the largest rocket in the world. It wasn't electric powered, folks.
Well, and then Maymann, you talked about with the ethanol and water, their biggest thing right now is they have so many cities, countries, counties that want their generators to charge electrical cars. There's not enough generation on the planet to plug in all the cars. So they have so many orders for generators just for charging vehicles.
Yep, I can see that. Absolutely.
And that's ingenious. I mean, that's green. I have nothing against electrical cars.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Amazing. All right, Keith, is there anything that we didn't talk about that you wanted to talk about? Right. Because I know we can. It's very difficult in the length of a typical Hidden Horsepower episode to cover like every form of motorsport that exists. For instance, like Pro Stock, where Hartford runs. I know you've been in and out of that. Recently made a manifold rule, like nothing. I just had this conversation at the Gator National. Nothing can be in the manifold. No deflectors, no diffusers, no nothing. It's got to be like the quote I heard from Lonnie Grimm was, it's got to be like a can. Like when you open a can, what's in there? There's nothing. That has changed the game a little bit. What do you think about modern Pro Stock?
Pro Stock has been one of my loves of my life forever. I grew up around road racing, but I love Pro Stock. It's one of the hardest classes on the planet. And I like Cup and Pro Stock because they're naturally aspirated. They're the most refined naturally aspirated engines on the planet. And when you can find power there, you're doing something. But in pro stock, it used to be 500 inch. You ran a racing fuel and they left you alone. Now that you can't do this in a manifold. Now, I don't like all the rules. You know, there are so many sanctioned bodies that are turning so many rules in. People are going to work hard and spend the money. It doesn't always save money. Guys that race in NHRA or almost any or in any series, they get up every morning to compete. You know, I compete against other companies that do what I do. Yep. Some days I get beat, we go back to work. But all the guys that race want to try to improve it. They don't get up to run a rental car and they're all the same. You know, how can I get an advantage over you? You know, that's what a racing person is. And they keep sanction bodies keep taking this out of racing. And like, if you look at NASCAR now, it's gotten boring or in my, you know, other people say it, not just me, but I think they get too involved. Before the manifold was open, as long as it was aluminum and you had two carburetors or now one throttle body in the front, it was open. You know, they specify where the injector is, what throttle body you run, what injector. I think they take the creativity out of it. And also, if you look in automotive OE, there is so much from racing that ends up back in a street car that it's not talked about enough because it doesn't give the innovators in racing enough, you know, on braking, safety, fuel economy, efficiencies, just on and on. And I think they should let us create.
I couldn't agree more. Racing creates innovation, and innovation is what moves us forward. Who, you know, if we all want to go watch crate engines race, I mean, how many people are in the stands? I mean, it may be great for the guys in the car, but how many spectators are out there? We're always pushing the limits, and we're always trying to go more, more, more. You know, the rules inhibit everything. It makes it cost more. I remember, you know, particular, you know, crate engine circle track class. I'm looking at the engine. The headers cost more than the engine. How is this saving anybody any money? Well, let's open it up and let's let them go race.
I was deeply involved with most all NASCAR teams for years and years, and they would come up with a new rule, and the first thing is to save money. The teams did not save any money. They spent their budget. They're going to refine that car until the end of time. That is, does not change what they're going to work. It changed how they work on it or what they do, but it doesn't spend any less money. So that's not a true statement. The teams are, you know, in pro stock or super stock, anything, they're going to work on that car as hard as they can. And that's what gets us all out of bed and enjoy racing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Jones, final question for Wilson, then I'll hit him with our hidden horsepower question.
So I've got to go back to when Matt was driving your car.
Yeah.
You know, awesome stories. I have to go to that. And that thing, and I'll say I was kind of involved with that because I got a phone call from, we'll see, a hidden horsepower alum, God rest his soul, Ron Hutter. And Ron, not the happiest guy right at the moment. And boy, if I knew somebody that could drive a car, I'd go, well, yeah, I know a guy. And, you know, try to put all that together. But I, you know, we'll just say, I know there was a certain incident where the Wilson's manifold sign was upside down on the car.
Matt had a little episode, but no, I didn't own the car, and that was a misconception. Billy Dingman, a guy who owns quite a few dealerships out of Orlando area, old road racer. He actually owned a NASCAR team. Now he's in Europe running Ferrari Challenge. He came to us because he knew I was helping Greg and Jason. And he said, would you do the same thing for my team? And I said, sure. So he took our catalog, and he told me, come up and look. He says, I'll give your guy a try. He was complaining about a driver. I said, I got a driver. Robbie's one of the best there is. And we went up there and he painted the car like Robbie's car we had down here in South Florida we ran. So that's how it all started. And then I actually got Ron Hutter to be the engine builder, and Dingman couldn't believe it. And so Ron started building engines and we ran really well, did quite well. And then he wanted to try a different driver after a while. And that's how Matt got involved. But we won a championship with Matt.
Yep. Outstanding. That's
amazing.
Outstanding.
Amazing. So we got a Hartford story. I know you got an Earnhardt story in there too somewhere, don't you, Keith? Like, you got, like, this is hidden horsepower. If you got one, now's the time.
I did a lot for them over the years. And he was when you talk to Spinney or any of the engine builders that were there, Dale wanted something to pull off the corner. So one year when he was going for he had opportunity for his eighth championship. And that's when we used to do a qualifying manifold, a practice manifold, and a race manifold. In other words, they had three engines they changed all weekend. And the manifolds were glued down, no valley trays. They were one piece. So I called Spinny and I asked him, I said, look, let me build you a manifold for Atlanta. They were going to Atlanta towards the end of the year. And he was like second in points or something. He had a chance to win the eighth championship. I said, please just try it. All I ask you is try it. So we built it like a super comp manifold. You could flick it and it sounded like tinfoil. Because you're not allowed to weld on the outside. NASCAR's got a lot of rules. So and it had to be legal for those guys. So, you know, I wouldn't do anything to cause them problems. So anyway, it dynoed really well. They were impressed. And that's the first year I think they went to radial from BiasFly. And Dale didn't qualify as good on the radials. Well, he qualified towards the front, you know, and they were really excited. And Dale came up to me with his finger and goes in my chest. He goes, it better get effing fuel mileage. I'm like, "You, what else do you want, you know? But he ended up doing really well in the race, but I think he got taken out in a wreck. He ran up front and ran really well.
Outstanding.
That's awesome.
And he never forgot that, you know, I tried for him. He used to always get phone calls, like people asking, because he's knowledgeable. He built his own engines and cars in the beginning of his career. And he always, with people asking for advice around the country, he'd say, call that boy in Florida for a manifold. It was funny.
That's awesome.
He always took good care of us.
Well, and that brings us to our hidden horsepower question. You know, we like to think, we all know that there's got to be another wave that comes behind us, except for in broadcasting, which there should not be any new wave. But in engine building, there should definitely be a new wave. And we like to ask you guys, what advice would you give to the next generation of engine builder, of car kids, of the people that are coming up that's going to get them ahead, that's going to get them down the road a little bit and help them with their careers that hopefully go as long as yours has?
For me first?
Yes, you. This is your question.
Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't know if you were asking both. But
nah, Keith Jones. We already know what Jones
said. He knows what I think.
Come on.
Sam's School or Sam Tech is one of the best places. They I've worked with them for years and had quite a few employees come from there, but it's the best school I know of, the only school that teaches to the level of truly what an engine needs, how to machine it. They teach cording, understanding airflow. That's one of the best things. And the other one is I've helped schools over the year, colleges, with Formula SAE. And that's an unbelievable program. They race up at Michigan Speedway every year. I usually go. And I help FAU right now the last 10 years. But that, when I talk to the GM recruiter, he says they get millions of resumes a day. And he says the number one thing they look at is it says Formula SAE. They know that they actually worked on something, maybe failed, but they actually worked by hand. They just weren't good at taking a test, reading a book. So they say they go to the top of the pile. And you can go around in NHRA, NASCAR, IRL, you know, the Road Race Series, and you'll see people on crews that come out of that program, Formula SAE. And you see a lot of people from Sam's Tech at these places. So if somebody's really young and wants to apply themselves, you know, and not play on their phone all day, it's definitely, the place to be.
Yeah.
And I wish I had gone to Formula SAE or SAM school when I was young.
Oh yeah, you'd be ahead. You'd finally have that job in Formula One.
Yeah, possibly.
Keith, thank you very much. I appreciate you coming on Hidden Horsepower and sharing a little bit about your story, and super excited about just some of the things that you've got going on. This Aqua Stroke is interesting. But really the 340 in a nitro car, that got a lot of attention. And I think it got a lot of attention. We're waiting, you know, like the NHRA national record is one thing, but it got everybody excited that it's possible and it can happen and it will happen. It's just a matter of time. Well, and Tasca was 337 at the Gator Nationals. We just missed out on the best session.
Yeah, he went 341 at Bradenton.
Well, exactly.
But those his crew chiefs are amazing. I can talk to them about tune. I'm not the tune-up guy, but I can make them understand what the engine needs or, you know, as far as flow and what the engine is doing through the RPM. So those two guys are amazing to work with. And honestly, Tasca drives the wheels off that thing. That one pass in Bradenton, the hose came off fuel line and hit the one tire. How do you keep that thing straight with that much acceleration? You know, how he kept it off the wall was amazing. But he drives the wheels off of it. It's a good team. And that's why I said I've been fortunate in my career to work with quality people.
Exciting. Yeah, great stuff, and we're just getting started. Keith Wilson, thank you very much for spending a little time with us on Hidden Horsepower.
Thank you. Great show.
Thank you.
There he goes. Appreciate you taking the time.
Keith Wilson.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
On Hidden Horsepower. And Keith Jones, wow, that was amazing.
It was. You know, it's so great being able to talk to guys like Keith that have all this knowledge, all this experience. And you know, part of what we're doing is trying to document that. And I'm sure we got like 1/1,000th of what that man has to say.
Yeah. And we mentioned, you know, like just some of the hits, whether it be on safety, got an Earnhardt story, got a Hartford story. Like, to me, that's it's funny. This community is big, but it's small, right? There's, like, he mentions Kazi and the boats. He's mentioning all these people, and many of them have been on Hidden Horsepower in the past. All right. What's up with Total Seal? Tell everybody how they can get a hold of you if they want to get their own ring seal problem solved.
Well, just kind of reach out back there, totalseal.com. All of our email addresses on there, info@totalseal. You have any questions you got for us, reach out to us on the toll-free 800-874-2753. Feel free to reach out to us. We always get back to you. It might take a little bit. It's pretty crazy. It's that time of the year. Everybody's trying to go racing. It's right there in front of us. So it's a little busy, a little hectic, but that's a good thing. Always feel free to reach out.
There you go. And they will. And they do. That is for certain. Keith, thank you so much.
Thank you, Joe. I really appreciate it. And thanks for having me, and look forward to the next time. And I know we're not supposed to date it, but we're coming into Pomona. Go Hartford.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. He runner up at both Pomona races last year. So he's got to go one round further. Thank you, Keith. Keith Jones, Director of Technical Sales at Total Seal Piston Rings. My name is Joe Costello. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram, X. And Instagram, WFO Joe. I do a podcast called WFO Radio, and I'm happy to see you there. We talk racing. Thanks to Keith Wilson, Keith Jones. We'll see you next time on Hidden Horsepower, presented by Total Seal.